Very briefly, be heard and corrected and stated in the record.
No. Call the next case.
Board of Supervisors at Stafford County and another versus Metz and others. Jen A. Quinn Jr., Jennifer D. Royer, Charles R. L. Jimmy County Attorney, Daniel J. Wisniewski, Assistant County Attorney, Thomas Council, H. Bar Fleming, Peter Basanti, R. Grant Becker, John H. Wood, Appalachian Council.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Jennifer Royer, and I have the privilege of representing the Board of Supervisors of Stafford County and the County of Stafford, Virginia. Present with me at Council's table is Daniel Wisniewski, the Assistant County Attorney for Stafford County. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
The issue before this court is whether the trial court had jurisdiction to decide questions related to the validity of the adoption of an amendment to one of Stafford County zoning ordinances, referred to on brief as the February Amendment, after the February Amendment was superseded by a subsequent amendment to the zoning ordinance in September of 2013. Because the Declaratory Judgment Act does not vest trial courts with jurisdiction to decide moot questions or cases in which there is no actual controversy or where there is no antagonistic assertion and denial of right, the county is asking this court to reverse the decision of the trial court on the basis that the trial court lacked jurisdiction under the Declaratory Judgment Act to reach the issues raised in the underlying litigation on the merits.
Has the county yet applied the September amendment to any of these applicants?
These applications, actually, Your Honor, it's hard to answer the question with a yes or no, because if the court were to look at the timeline for the various applications, what we have is a situation where at the time that the February amendment was adopted, the only application that was pending with a submission before the county was the Poplar, I believe it was the Poplar Corner application. The other ones had not actually had an active application. The applications were incomplete, meaning that the county had reviewed the applications. The county had failed each application on its review. There had been subsequent resubmissions of the applications in an effort to correct the issues that were underlying in the failed review, and then there had been subsequent resubmissions. For Plaintiff Metz, which had the Potomac Creek Overlook application, it failed its third review on February 12, 2013. It had no submission pending with the county at the time the February amendment was adopted. Accordingly, since there was nothing pending, it has not been reviewed under the September amendment either. The Horton plaintiff had the Clift Farm Porter application pending. That one was a little bit of a different situation, being that it failed its first review in August of 2012, and there was not actually a second submission filed to correct those issues until September 17th of 2013, more than a year later. That second submission was reviewed and failed on September 17th through 19th, and the third submission was actually reviewed, on March 3rd, 2014. So that application did not have a submission pending at the time that the February amendment was adopted, but subsequent to that, actually around the time that the September amendment was adopted, there was a resubmission. So that application is subject to the September 2013 amendment.
Were any of them that were failed done so because of factors that were peculiar to the February amendment?
Each of these applications at one point in time failed because of the February 2013 amendment, but that was not the sole basis for failing the application. Each of the applications also failed for reasons unrelated to the February 2013 amendment.
So let me just make sure I've got it clear. If there had been no February 13 amendment, all of these would have been failed under the existing standards, be they for boundary surveys or 100-foot width, lot widths, or things of that nature.
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Well, that's your assertion, but the trial court made no factual finding on that subject.
The trial court did not make a determination on, a factual determination on that issue, because frankly that issue was not before the court on this series of issues.
Well, who has the burden of proof to establish mootness withdrawing jurisdiction of a court?
Well, if the burden of establishing mootness would have been on the county, Your Honor.
So if a trial judge hears this complicated matrix of facts, sees interlocking reasons given for the request for additional review and the temporary denials, why can't a trial judge say, you know what, you have the burden of proof, I'm not satisfied by a preponderance that this is truly moot?
Well, the reason in this particular instance, Your Honor, if I could go back to the issues that were actually pending before the trial court on this case, and this is why it's a complex situation. There were actually 9 cases before the trial court in a very abbreviated period of time. The issues on before the trial court in this particular case related solely to whether or not the county had validly adopted the February amendment. The issues were related to whether or not the descriptive summary in the newspaper advertisement was adequate, and whether or not the
Can a pending case remain alive and survive a mootness challenge because of collateral consequences involving other parallel litigation?
No, Your Honor.
Do you have authority for that?
I apologize.
I guess broadly speaking, put your case aside for a moment. Is mootness always confined to the four corners of the pleadings of that case, or do circumstances for which the court can take judicial notice of, like parallel proceedings, implicate the presence or absence of mootness?
Well, Your Honor, to answer your question broadly, looking at whether or not there were collateral issues that could have asked or could have caused the court to not rule on the mootness argument, that is something that the court could have presumably elected to do. The court could have presumably said, I cannot rule on the mootness issue because of some collateral issue.
Didn't the court refer to the 2232 proceeding as possibly one of those collateral consequences that unnerved the court?
Well, Your Honor, the peculiarity with the court's ruling on the mootness defense was that it was basically said that it can't rule on the mootness defense pending hearings on the procedural posture of the other applications. However, in that case, what we've referred to as the 2232 review cases, most of the parties to this case were not parties to that case.
But they some are. Horton and Metz, right?
Horton and Metz were. Now, if we go back to the issue of what evidence was presented to the trial court, and that's where the real issue lies, the only way that issue of approval would have been appropriate for the court to exercise its jurisdiction is if there had been some kind of vested rights in issue under count 3. So there were 3 counts that were pending in the case. The first one was related to the descriptive summary, the second one was related to the notice to the landowners, and the third was an alternative count. In the event that the court determined that the amendment was valid, then in that event, there was a challenge to how the county was calculating its density. And for that reason, the court could have theoretically had jurisdiction over count 3 if there had been a situation of vested rights.
What about a potential Berman claim?
The Berman case is an opposite to the case at bar, Your Honor. And the reason being, in Berman, for example, there was a situation where an applicant had the trial court below had made a finding of fact that the applicant had complied in all regards to the substantive ordinances in effect, and that the county actively delayed its decision on the application until such time as it could pass an ordinance amendment that would prohibit this restaurant that they were proposing. That issue in the Berman case was a writ of mandamus action. There was no challenge to the validity of the zoning ordinance in issue. And that case involved an issue of a site plan application. So the zoning was in effect. Theoretically, it was permissible.
If a proposal is denied in part on an invalid amendment to the ordinance, the February ordinance, if that's part of the reason why an application is bounced or sent back for rewriting or whatever, and there's a theoretical Berman claim that can be asserted, why doesn't that preserve the logical relevance of whether or not that February bump in the road was really a bump in the road at all?
I apologize, Your Honor, but I'm not sure I understand the court's question.
When you distinguish Berman, I get that. This case may be different from Berman, but we don't have a Berman case in front of us. But theoretically, we could, or they could theoretically file one tomorrow. Why wouldn't the presence or absence of a valid or invalid February amendment factor into that equation? Because if the ministerial duty was implicated, and the only reason the ministerial duty was not complied with was a mistaken belief that the February amendment was valid, why wouldn't the judge hearing that case want to know, well, was it? I don't know.
Well, if I may take you back into the factual circumstances of the case, the plaintiffs in this issue were not looking to develop their property in accordance with the February 2013 amendment. They were looking to develop their property in accordance with the original cluster amendment from June of 2012. Mm-hmm. And whether or not that their series of applications complied with the cluster ordinance in effect in June of 2012 was never before the trial court.
I get that. There was no Berman claim made in this case. I'm wondering if that matters.
It does matter, because the only issues in this case before the trial court were the questions of whether or not this February amendment had been validly adopted. Those were the only issues before the trial court. So the question was the descriptive summary in the newspaper advertisement sufficient? Did the county provide sufficient written notice to affected landowners? Those were the only issues in terms of the validity of the ordinance that were before the trial court. Everything else is kind of, for lack of a better expression, kitchen sink arguing. Let's just throw everything out there into the kitchen sink and see what's
in that regard. Why don't we do something that we probably always ought to do? Let's go back and look at what they asked for. All right? There are multiple complaints, and they all have the same common prayer for relief. Determine and declare that the failure to provide mailed written notice to METS, as alleged in here, and the other complaints are the same, prior to hearings, et cetera, is in violation of the requirements of Code Section 15.2, et cetera, and renders the amendment void ab initio. They got that, didn't it?
The trial court did determine that the amendment was void ab initio.
The answer is yes?
I'm sorry?
The answer is yes?
Yes.
They got that. Two. Additionally, or alternatively, determine and declare that the notices published prior to the hearings do not comply with the requirements of 15.2 and 2204 because they do not contain adequate descriptive summary and render the cluster ordinance amendment void ab initio. Got that, too?
No.
They didn't need to get it.
I'm sorry?
They got number one, and
correct.
They didn't need to get two.
Correct.
Number three, alternatively. Now, alternatively, if I don't get one or two, then alternatively, determine and declare that et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's not even before you now because you got one of the others, one and two. Alternatively doesn't come into complaint, into contest. Four, grant temporary permanent injunctive relief, barring the board from enforcing the amendment. Got that. The rest is costs and reasonable attorney's fees and such further relief as the court deems just and equitable. What's left?
Well, based on the prayer for relief, the only issue is to seek an invalidation of the February amendment.
And they got it.
And the trial court exercised jurisdiction on that and decided that it
What's
was
left?
There's nothing left at that point.
That's
Your Honor.
The point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Minute 45.
May it please the court, my name is John Foote, and I'm here at council table with Clark Lemming and Grant Decker, who have been my co-counsel representing the multitude of clients in this case. I want to start with the general proposition that the only way we submit that the court can come to the conclusion this case is moot is to take it in isolation and to ignore the fact that this case is a star in a constellation of nine cases. All of those cases were directed at the ultimate approval of these very cluster development plans, which the county has never approved. For reasons that I shall discuss with you momentarily, we disagree.
Counsel, our challenge is that those cases aren't before us.
those cases aren't before you because this case specifically is, but if you look at the record in this case, the judge made a specific ruling. Judge Sharp, aptly named, may I say, Judge Sharp was very clear as to what was going on. In fact, everybody in the courtroom knew what was going on. It was that this was a part and parcel of the overarching claims that were before it. In fact, the court took evidence, Your Honor, that had nothing to do with the notice claim.
Yeah, the record reflects that there are other things, but we don't have them. Now, if we dispose of this one, aren't those other things going to get here eventually?
No. If you dispose of this as moot, then we submit that the cases may well be over, although there's been no argument or explanation.
Why does a simple finding that the February... Why does the granting to you of all of the relief you asked for somehow preclude the relief that you want in the other cases?
If the February ordinance is moot, if it never existed, if it's not relevant to this case, well, you have to appreciate the proposition that one of the arguments in the underlying case, which is a 2259-2260 claim that our cluster development plan should have been approved, is that they should have been approved long before the September amendment.
Where is that in the case, really?
It is not, because it's in the other cases that are related.
That's the problem. I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, the Berman issues and all the other things that have been touched upon, they're fascinating. I wish I could get to them. I look at what you've asked for, there's nothing left. It's the essence of mootness.
Well, we don't disagree that what the judge did here was to invalidate the February amendment.
Right.
They're saying that basically that eliminates our ability to litigate cases that were completely intertwined with this. Now,
but
granted,
there's nothing in this lawsuit that addresses that. You got exactly what you asked for.
We did.
Yeah. Well, it's a declaratory judgment. Judge declare these things. Judge does declare these things. What is left in a declaratory judgment action if you get everything you ask him to declare?
I think the point that I commenced with, Your Honor, was that if the court concludes that this case needs to be and must be and cannot otherwise legally be considered but in isolation, then, in fact, the mootness argument may have some merit to it.
Well, but see, that's not our problem. That's your problem. You're the one that brought the case to the court. You're the one that said, declare this. We don't control your pleadings. You control your pleadings. You asked for it. You got it.
Well, it's... Let me go back a little bit of the history of how this evolved, and that may assist in some measure. The county adopted a cluster development ordinance in June of 2012. These landowners made application for cluster development approvals, which grant what's called a density bonus. Under the state statute authorizing the cluster development plans, you do have the opportunity to get extra lots if you do certain things with respect to compliance with the ordinance and statute.
Counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt. I can assure you the court's familiar with the facts. But if the trial judge had held that the entire proceeding was moot, what you got goes away.
I'm sorry, what we got goes away?
The
victory that we
achieved?
The
victory is wiped out if the case is moot because a court issues a final order saying this case is moot, I have no jurisdiction, is going to vacate the prior order saying whatever they said. So the question I have, though, is different. Tell me logically exactly why the validity of the February 2013 ordinance impacts either your 2232 cases or your potential Berman claims. Just logically. Forget the facts. I just need to understand your logic.
Well, it has to tie back to a fact, and that is contrary to the arguments that have been advanced that there were all sorts of defects with these applications. Testimony at trial from the county's planning director was that there were really only two reasons that the plans weren't capable of being approved. The first was, with respect to Horton and Metch, that it did not have 2232 approvals. With respect to all five of them was that they weren't consistent with the February amendment. Well, if what sustains their declination to act, their refusal to approve these plans, was a two-legged stool, one leg of which is already illegal, and the other of which has been tried, but as to which no opinion has been rendered, it ends up being kicked out if Judge
Sharp... So your point is, factually, a fact finder could say, no, the true reason your Berman claim or your 2232 claim wins is because all these other reasons were pretextual, and the real reason was the February change.
Exactly correct. Just you can look at, I believe, the actual testimony. You can find it, pages 650 to 656 of the joint appendix, where Mr. Harvey goes through each and every one of the applications and says as to Horton and Metz, it's only 2232 in the February Amendment, and as to the other three, it's only the February Amendment. Well, we've got a two-legged stool holding up approval of these things, one of which is already illegal.
Why can't you raise that very point in your 2232 proceeding or your later Berman?
Well, that's hard. We, in fact, have got pending, the 2232 case has been tried. It was tried 2 weeks after this.
Counsel, the difficulty we have is that this is really fascinating stuff. I'd love to see those other cases. I'd love to hear the arguments. I'd love for them to be briefed. It's not here. We've got a very simple question. The question has been answered. And now we are being asked to be useful in the perspective of multiplicity of litigation that we are strangers to. Why can't you amend your pending circuit court cases to reflect that the judge has ruled that the February amendment is void ab initio, and therefore, and then you just proceed with whatever relief you're seeking in those cases, and eventually we'll see them.
One of the days...
We were just discussing on the side here.
I kind of like to be part of this.
Yes.
That's how we feel.
And you may very well be a part of it. That's what I've been asking. I think I just understood what it is that you're saying. Your arguments lead us astray, unfortunately, because you want to get out into the next case. What you have is a victory. You got everything you want. You just don't want anybody to declare that moot.
Correct, because if I can answer...
But we can't get into all the other issues that you're talking about.
They weren't tried. One's been tried, and the other one's the 2260 claims that have been tried.
The problem of this case is that the briefing of the case goes into all these collateral issues that are not before us. You have a victory. You just want to keep it.
That is... Well, I wish I'd said it as simply as that. One day, Your Honor, I'm going to be given a case in which I turn to a witness and say, what were you doing on the evening of the 26th? Land use lawyers don't get that. We have the rolling wheel of public justice here, and we are faced with circumstances in which steps are taken that we must seriatim challenge because they don't occur at once.
Right.
And that's what happened here, and so we file lawsuits at different times during the course of this thing. The notice cases that you have before you were, in fact, consolidated. The 2232 cases were, in fact, consolidated. When we get to the 2260 cases, they're going to be consolidated. It was 7 months after the September amendment before the county even raised the motion to dismiss for suggesting mootness. It was a piece of spaghetti in our judgment that was simply thrown on the wall to see what happened, and here we are talking to the lovely ladies and gentlemen of the Supreme Court of Virginia about it. We submit that you don't have to decide the other cases. You can't decide the other cases. But you can't ignore them. And because we have prevailed, there is no February amendment, and that leads us back into the other cases that were alleged at the same time and were considered. The judge knew all this was going on.
And my understanding of your position, in essence, is that the other cases prove that the ruling in this case was not moot.
Yes, sir, that would be exactly correct.
Judge Sharp understood
it, Your Honor. He said it in a number of occasions. We even submit that the county itself was aware of this and said so.
But isn't the principle that seems to cut through all of this is the burden of proof? Mootness, burden of proof is on the defendant. So if a trial judge and seven of us spend hours unpacking this case and we say, you know, truthfully, I don't exactly know where these dominoes are going to drop, then the party with the burden of persuasion loses because the decision maker is unclear as to what the implications are.
Your Honor, I would absolutely concur, and I believe that Judge Sharp understood it that way. To my point that I believe the county was fully aware of what was going on, during the course of the June 17th trial in this matter, there was all this evidence with respect to the approvability of the applications, which everyone sort of recognized didn't have anything to do with the merits of the trial that was going on, but it was raised because this mootness defense had suddenly emerged a couple of months before trial. The judge asked county's counsel why it was there, why we're talking about this, and he asked whether the validity of the February amendment had an impact on the final resolution of, quote, this case. This is at Joint Appendix 598-599. In considering the evidence that the county put on as to whether the cluster plans were approvable, did that assume, the judge asked the county, that the February ordinance was valid? To which the answer was, yes, Your Honor, if the ordinance is deemed to be invalid, then I guess its approval of a cluster concept plan on that ground does not really matter because the ordinance is not valid, so the applicant does not have to comply with the ordinance. So the county is actually telling Judge Sharp exactly what we would suggest is ultimately going to be a part of what is decided. There was a critical exchange later in that same area where Judge Sharp said, I understand we have got a little mesh of issues here, and so there is a little digression is unavoidable. He's talking now about this evidence about approvability of plans or not. But would you agree that to a large degree, these questions of whether all the facts or information was there to warrant an approval really go more to whether an approval by right should have been had, which is an issue for the next case. Am I right? Yes, Your Honor. From the county's counsel.
So the evidence comes, even the September readoption is not part of the pleadings. The evidence comes in at the request of the county seeking to undo the court's ruling with their burden of proving mootness. You have evidence in the record to respond to that, and now the fact finder sits down and figures out whether or not these dominoes drop.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, if there are no further questions, I will rest.
All right. Rebuttal, 1 minute, 45 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. The key in this case is that this case must be viewed in isolation. It cannot be viewed in accordance or in conjunction with the 2232 review cases.
Then why did you bring up the September readoption?
Because that goes to the very heart of the issue as to whether or not the court had jurisdiction under the Declaratory Judgment Act.
Right. I get that. If you come in with evidence of mootness, they come in with evidence of not mootness. A fact finder hears it all, and the party with the burden of proof loses.
But they did not come in with evidence of not mootness, Your Honor. The evidence before the trial court was that the was of how the February ordinance had been adopted, and then there was testimony from the county director that no applications are being reviewed under that ordinance, and that the applications were currently being reviewed under the September ordinance. That the issue with respect to the approval of the applications came in only for the purpose of the third count, which was whether or not the county had made a determination with respect to calculations that the court could approve. And also because there was a mudding of the cases, and plaintiff's counsel in its case in chief presented evidence of what they alleged was the approvability of the applications under the original cluster ordinance as the basis for why the February amendment and the September amendment didn't matter.
Counsel,
that issue wasn't before the court. I apologize.
I'm afraid that we're once again getting, you know, we've got this tiny little battle that's right in front of us, and then we've got World War III going on in Stafford County. And so let's just focus on this tiny little battle for a second. What's in front of us is, the judge said, it's not moot. Now, we can either say, well, it is moot because everything asked for in this suit has been granted. They won. Or we can say, they won, and there's nothing else left, and we're just going to let the judge control his own docket, and if he wants to leave this case open, well, the judge can leave this case open. But do you agree that in our order or opinion in this case, we don't have to get into the other cases, we don't have to get into Berman, we don't have to get into vested rights? All we have to say is they got everything they asked for, whether we declare it moot or not moot.
Actually, Your Honor, no. And we don't have to get into the issue of Berman. We don't have to get into the issue of vested rights. But the issue on mootness was that the February amendment that was being challenged had been superseded by another ordinance and was not the law in Stafford County. Accordingly, there was no actual controversy pending with respect to the February amendment at the time that the case went to trial. And if I may further answer the court's question, and I understand that my time is
That's
up.
Okay.
There's a great quote from the case of Hankins v. Town of Virginia Beach that I think really goes to the heart of the county's position. It says, whenever it appears or it is made to appear that there is no actual controversy between the litigants, or that if it once it existed, it has ceased to do so, it is the duty of every judicial tribunal not to proceed to a formal determination of the apparent controversy, but to dismiss the case. It is not the office of courts to give opinions on abstract propositions of law or to decide questions upon which no rights depend.
Counsel, we know that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now.
And so the point, Your Honor, is that there were no rights in issue under the February Amendment, and therefore...
All of these other cases are pending in Stafford County. Is that correct?
They have all been tried and are awaiting determination by the trial court.
And are they all in front of Judge Sharp?
They are.
Is there any doubt that Judge Sharp is going to know what his ruling was in this case as he proceeds to final judgment in those cases?
No.
Then why are we here?
Because at the end of the day, Your Honor, by having the trial court reach a determination to invalidate an outdated and superseded ordinance, there was a monkey wrench thrown into the process. These applications that were pending with the county are that the plaintiffs are alleging they now need to be reviewed under the original cluster ordinance. But because they had never been approved prior to or after the February amendment, they now have to be approved under the current ordinance in effect, the September ordinance. That's why we're here, Your Honor, because the court ruled and effectively invalidated an ordinance that didn't apply anywhere in the county at the time that the case was pending before the court. Thank you.
All right. Call the next case.